Welcome to Big Brave Business. This is a podcast built on the belief that you can create absolutely anything for yourself. Whether it's a dream job or a dream life, it's all possible for you.
I'm Amanda Nelson, a virtual assistant and digital marketer. And that's Sarah Heater, podcast producer and strategic consultant. Each week, we will share insights from working with dozens of clients, stories of how we got where we are, and encourage you to see us as your new business besties.
So grab a cup of coffee and let's talk being brave in business. Welcome back to Big Brave Business. Amanda, are you ready for part three of this conversation? These are like some of the biggest conversations we've had.
Listen, I'm ready. I'm ready to do this. I told you, let's keep it going. I'm ready for part 26. We'll just turn this whole thing into a religious deconstruction / capitalism podcast. But I think we would lose the majority of our audience. But I'm totally down to talk about it. And I'm
excited. I don't know. If you're still hanging in there with us, if you got through the last episode, you are absolutely our people. Please come nerd out with us on all the platforms and all the places. And let's be real life friends, because this is hard. And as you were pointing out, Amanda, at the end of the last episode, it's also lonely.
Yeah.
I can remember, and I was so glad you said that, because I can remember telling my two best friends that after I had left my job, that I was going to focus on entrepreneurship. And if you've been listening to this podcast, you've heard the story of me getting laid off. My position was eliminated. I was wearing a Halloween costume. It was awful. It was mortifying. God. It was a really terrible day. So that's my version of getting kicked out of ministry school, is getting laid off in a Halloween costume. totally unexpected, had the rug pulled out from under me. But I remember after that, as I was trying to figure out what's my next move, where do I want to go from here, telling my two best friends that I was going to focus on entrepreneurship, and that I didn't think we'd always bonded over having this shared dream of the corner office, of the C-suite executive, of lipstick jungle, of we're going to have yearly bestie vacations where we're spending our money to go to Europe and we're talking about what we've accomplished.
How
in the corporate world.
I mean, Sarah.
We had this whole vision. That's like, we built our friendship around this, that we were super ambitious and we wanted the C-suite life as we saw it. And I kind of went to them and said, you know what? Fuck this, man. Like, I have been pouring myself into my last several jobs, and no matter how much of myself I pour out, I'm not only not getting it back, but now I've had it all ripped away and I don't think I can go through this anymore. And I think what I want to do is build something on my own. I think I want to pursue entrepreneurship. I don't think I'm buying into the 9-to-5 life. I think it's a rat race. I think it's a wheel to keep people small. I think that corporations and the people who run them want to crush us actively. This entire country is built on the backs of people's labor, and I don't want to be part of that anymore. And how can I opt out? I can't. But the closest that I see that I can get is to do my own thing and to pursue entrepreneurship. And they thought I was nuts. I mean, my two closest friends literally told me in that conversation, and shout out to you if you're listening, love you, we got through this. But my two closest friends literally said, you need therapy. This sounds like grief. Are you okay? Or is this a call for help, a cry for help? Like, I feel like you are kind of out of your mind.
Gosh.
And the blessing was that I did find a community of people online who understood those feelings. Now, flash forward post pandemic and all of these other crazy political and social movements that have happened in the last few years. And the whole world is having conversations about the problems with 9-to-5 life and advocating for work from home and advocating for flexibility and realizing that our priorities are all messed up, that when we were forced to quarantine and losing loved ones and all of this, having these conversations about why, this doesn't serve any of us. So now we have a lot more shared language to discuss that. And they've definitely seen that this was not a phase and it was not a cry for help. It's actually like been a really, really huge blessing in my life and I'm doing well. So thankfully our friendship got through it. I know that's not always the case when it comes to deconstruction. So anyway, just wanted to share a little Sarah story time. We got Amanda story time. Here's a little Sarah story time.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I always love to hear your story of you leaving corporate behind, because the picture of you in a Halloween costume getting fired is both endearing and heartbreaking at the same time.
Fucking whiskers on my face. Yeah.
That's brutal. Yeah. That's brutal.
It really was. And also, I don't think they listened to this, but shout out to the people who pulled me into that office to have that conversation, because they're actually still clients of mine for the podcast world. We produced their podcast. They were our first official client in my entrepreneur life, and I'm on very good terms with them today. So it really wasn't like what you think of as like firing. It really was my job was being eliminated, but it took time. It took some time for me to process that. So I'm curious, when you mentioned loneliness, did you have, you know, you had to have a hard conversation with your mother. You shared that in the previous episode, and you obviously your community was in this community. So how did that affect like your friendships and your relationships? What happened?
So basically when I had to sigh, because that's probably the hardest part of it all for me, was the fact that because you're indoctrinated into this community and you're believed to think like, oh, this, they love to throw around words like family. And so it makes this atmosphere of like, these are my brother. And you even call each other brother and sister. Like, this is my brother. Mm. This is my sister. Like, and we would all like at ministry school, you don't really call each other by your names. You're like, hey, bro, hand me that. Or hey, sis, hand me that. So you're subconsciously learning that these are my family members. Right. Mm-hmm. So then you are, and I'll share this quick, just to give you an example of how deep it goes. When you go to ministry school, you get these rings that you wear, and it's a symbol of kind of like marriage. It's a symbol to show that you are committed to the process. Like, you are committed to the next 9 months of dedicating your life to God, focusing only on God, not worrying about, you know, being in a relationship. You couldn't date, and you're like not allowed to do anything secular. So music, movies, etc. So you're committed, right? The day that they asked me to leave, the woman who was over the girls, my class, took that from me in front of everybody. Outside of my car, she had put everything in my car out of my apartment to send me home from South Carolina to Alabama. And what was so sad about this to me too, Sarah, just looking back on this, is I have learned since that the people that have gotten kicked out previously before me, they called their families to come get them. I didn't have anybody. Like, I was very much so there alone. I paid my tuition alone. I had already lived on my own for about 4 years. I left my small town literally the week after I graduated high school. So I didn't really have a big connection to like come pick me up. And so when they kicked me out knowing that they were going to make me drive 10 hours by myself. After kicking me out. And the last thing that this lady did was she held out her hand. She said, I need the ring back that you didn't commit to. That was the last thing that was said to me in front of all of these people who I had referred to as my brothers and sisters for months and months and months. So talk about loneliness. And think about this. I was 21 years old. 21. I never heard from any of the girls that were in my class except for one. Shout out to Keely. She ended up like being a big part of my wedding. She was just like, she's still a friend of mine. But out of the 100+ people in my class, nobody reached out to me. Now, whether or not they were told not to, who knows? But I never heard back from them until much later, until they were all out of the school. And now they all follow me on Instagram, which is ironic, I feel. And a lot of them married out of ministry school. So I didn't have anybody like married other people that were in the school. They all like married each other. So I feel like it was a lonely time because I didn't have anybody to like talk through the process with. I sure as heck didn't have anybody in small Bruton, Alabama to understand what I had left behind in South Carolina, because my parents really didn't understand what I was doing to begin with. They were like, oh, you want to do this? You're an adult. Good luck. It was just basically like I just didn't have anybody back home that understood South Carolina, of course, and what I had experienced there. And I had lived in Birmingham, Alabama before I went to South Carolina. So I had left all of my friends in Birmingham. I had not lived in Bruton since I graduated high school. So I was literally going back home, like starting all over. That's what I wish I could say is like I was starting all over. I had lived on my own. I had my own friends back in Birmingham at the time. So I didn't have anybody for that matter. So I really did it all by myself in a place where on Sundays, everything closes because everybody's at church. So it was a dark time. There was definitely nobody to go through that. But again, I always had that freedom. I always felt light. I always felt good about my decision. I never felt like I never felt like it was a weight on me. If anything, I felt more free. My dad, on the other hand, let me just say this. My mom was very much so worried about my soul. My dad was like, okay, so what are you going to do with your life? He's like, you got to get a career.
No big question.
Yeah, my dad, like I came home and I remember my dad, I was asleep on his couch because I had nowhere else to go. I had given up my apartment to go to ministry school. Like I had given up my whole entire life that I had built, a great job that I had with great friends, to go to this ministry school. So when I came home, my dad's like, what are you doing? You gotta.
Isn't that the most dad question?
Oh my God. I was like, Dad, I literally had only been home 12 hours. He was like, what are you doing? And I was like, great freaking question. When I figure it out, I'll let you know. So it was starting over, you know, which led me to start which we've talked about in the previous episodes, where I started my painted furniture business back home of all places, a place I never thought I'd move back to. So anyways, I hope that answers your question. I don't know.
No, yeah. I mean, I just wanted to hear about your loneliness. Okay, so one of the things I wanted to talk about in doing some reading about deconstruction, there's a bunch of kind of schools of thought or like people who have put their thoughts out there of like what the process of deconstruction looks like. And I found two that I think are really interesting, and I'll link them both in the show notes if we get a chance to talk about both. But the first one is like simpler, and it's three phases. The first phase is recognition. Second phase is reprogramming. And the third phase is relapse, which I think is really interesting. So just to give you like a quick explanation of what they are, recognition is when you first recognize that something is wrong with your belief system or lifestyle. And I think we've spent a lot of time talking here, but I'm happy to keep digging in if you want to. And if you listening want to hear more about it, but it's basically like you begin to see inconsistencies, errors, and imbalance between what you're taught and what your lived experience is and what the world really is like really recognizing that discrepancy. Or that something is wrong or something doesn't feel good. Like we talked about a couple episodes ago of like the ick factor, right? It feels bad. It hurts. It feels bad. It makes you feel guilt, shame, fear, those kind of things. Okay, so then reprogramming phase two. This is where you really start to do what we talked about in the last episode, where like you're breaking it out down into these small pieces and you're understanding where this came from. And then you have to, here's the next step of that, is like you have to replace those old ways and those old thoughts with new ones. And that gets really tricky and scary and hard because you don't know what the truth is. You don't know who to trust, even yourself. Like trusting yourself is hard. Trusting your gut, trusting your intuition, trusting like what you see and know to be true, that gets hard. Figuring out what's actively harmful and how to recognize it, that's hard. It's very, very frustrating. And understanding that like everyone and everything seems to have an agenda, and all you want is to feel like truth and peace. And so it's this like spiraling mentally, emotionally, spiritually, socially, it could even be economic or cultural spiraling. And actually one of the recommendations in this here says like take your time to research and study and also ask a lot of questions. So there's more to it than that, but I think that's really something interesting that we can talk about. And then the third part is relapse. So, and I think this is interesting too. This states that after months or years of intentional, targeted rebuilding, like really working through relationship struggles and identifying what you need to adjust in your life and your way of living, again and again, you get hit with these waves of realization that you thought you were done with deconstruction. You thought that you had done the work. You thought that you had made all this progress. And then you get hit again with realizing like there's still more learning/unlearning to do. So I'm curious like what your kind of gut reactions are to this way of thinking about deconstruction and like, I don't know, anything, any thoughts or feelings or experiences you want to dig into.
Yeah. So yeah. I have mentioned on the show before, and I've never really talked about it publicly, but while we're doing this thing, let's just do the damn thing, I guess. So
we're being big and brave.
Yeah. So I have mentioned on the show that in my very early 20s, when I was very, very, very young, I was married for a very brief period of time. That whole spiraling, looking for answers phase is when this happened in my deconstruction phase. I had moved back home. I met someone through my family had introduced me to someone who was very confident. He was a good bit older than I was. And he had traveled the world. He had his own thoughts. He was raised in the Baptist mindset, but he was not, he did not understand anything at all about what I had grown up in. And he was just so cultured. He was absolutely different from anybody that I had ever met before or since, was just so unique and so confident in what he believed. He was like, in a lot of ways, he was what I really needed at that moment. I needed someone to like solidify, like, you can be your own person. Like, specifically because I think it could have been easy for me to be back in my small town and kind of just gone back into the motions of going back to church because everybody else was. But I met this person who really confirmed a lot of things for me and also kind of helped me in that spiraling stage of like existential crisis. He really was like, hey, this is normal. Like, it's fine to feel this way. Like, he really did confirm a lot of things for me. He was a big hippie and all the things that come along with that, was just very open-minded and free. And that really gave me a lot of comfort at the time. So I give myself a lot of grace for that relationship and like the decision that we eloped. We got divorced few months later. But again, I don't think I ever would have done that had I would have had a support system, or I had friends, or if I wasn't alone. I was so lonely, you know, and you make mistakes like that. Shout out to all the men and women out there who go in relationships in times of loneliness and make bad decisions. Like, it happens to all of the best of us. Like, it's totally fine. Mm-hmm. We've all had bad relationships and bad periods of our time. It was not a good relationship for me. I'm so glad that I went through that. Like, no judgment or hate towards that person, because there was really good moments. But I don't think I would have had that experience and that life lesson of like, now I have to say that I've been divorced, which is heartbreaking. But I don't think I would have gone through that had I had support and love and friendship going through the whole process. I was really left to my own devices. So that's the first thing that I thought of when you were going through those phases. I have not gone through the like coming back to it. I don't think I ever will. But I do know there are a lot of people who deconstruct from the way they were raised in organized religion, and then they come to find their faith in their own way. I love that for them. Like, I absolutely love that for anybody that can do that. I think I'm so much of a skeptic at this point in my life and about pretty much anything. You know, if you listen to the show, you know I question literally everything. If it's not based in science, I have a very hard time believing it. Like, I'm sorry, I'm not team alien. I know everybody thinks that aliens are real because the government has now officially told us that we have aliens. I have to see it to believe it.
Sort of.
I mean, kind of. But like, I have to be able to see things now in my adult life. I just can't believe in something that's not real for me personally from a tangible standpoint. But I've never circled back to that, like my faith. But I will tell you what I have done as I get older is I do find myself craving community. I do find myself thinking like, is there a commune that would take me on, like, and let me like grow flowers and vegetables and still have Wi-Fi? Because that would be great. I would totally do that. I do miss the community aspect of it, but I will never go back to church.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I first pulled this up and I saw that the third phase was called relapse, I immediately thought that too, like going back, and I was like, oh, shoot. I mean, no, definitely not. But when I read what they're defining as relapse, I actually thought it was interesting that they're looking at relapse from a perspective of realizing there's still more to learn. Like, you thought you were done unlearning, and then those lessons continued to hit you of like, dude, I thought I already got past this. I thought I already learned this. I thought that I had already done the work, and now that was just in my rearview mirror. And I do feel like for me, with my deconstruction experience, it has been kind of like, there's always more to learn.
Oh yeah.
Like, if you want to put in the time, there is always more to learn. And you can feel like you've made progress, and you have made progress, but then realizing there's still so far to go can be disheartening, I think.
Yeah. It can feel overwhelming if you let it, you know. I am not, you and I are very different in this way. I don't like education. I don't want to educate myself. If I'm reading a book, I don't want it to be a book that's teaching me something unless it's through mm-hmm. like a fiction story. Like To Kill a Mockingbird, mm-hmm. it has a lot of undertones of some really good lessons to learn. But mm-hmm. I will never sit down with a book about, I don't know, accounting and want to learn more about how to like make my books better in my business. Like that's just not going to happen. I've told you that I'm the exact, you are also, you and I are very different in this way of when I listen to a podcast, I listen for entertainment first and foremost. Like I deal with so much information on a daily basis that for me, like sitting down and like trying to learn something new does not excite me. I'm not saying it's wrong or right. I'm just saying in differences of opinion, mm-hmm. it doesn't excite me. Like I want the escape. I want the like entertainment. I want to laugh. I want to watch something that's going to like scratch that itch of like keeping my brain distracted while I'm working on stuff. Mm-hmm. I wish I had more of a desire to learn. It's just not ingrained into me as a person. Maybe as I get older, but like I will never sit down and I'm sorry to my clients. I will never sit down and read a marketing book. I'm just more of an on the job kind of gal, you know? So I don't know if I'll ever dig into like, I have no desire to like read my Bible or to dig deeper into like, if anything, I'll watch a, I will do this. I will watch a documentary about organized religion. I find that fascinating.
So I was going to say that there's lots of different ways to learn. And I think in that second phase, in that reprogramming phase, there's a lot of suggestions about learning. And I think it's interesting to look at. There's ways, reading is definitely one of them, yeah. but there's lots of other ways. And you mentioned podcasts that you like listening to, and I know you're a documentary girl. Mm-hmm. And I think having conversations like this too, like that just having conversations with people is definitely a way of reprogramming. And then we've talked on this podcast before about therapy, like there's reprogramming that's going on there and like processing your own experiences through therapy, journaling, meditation, any of those kind of things. Like there's lots of ways to learn. I like all of them, but I understand that that's not necessarily for everyone. Yeah, but
it's just to me, it is, I think it's ADHD like in full force for me. I just get distracted so much and then I get frustrated that I'm distracted and then I'm over it. But in conversation, like if somebody wants to sit down, and I will say it's very few and far between in our political climate that people will have intelligent conversations about religion and be open-minded to the conversation. People immediately get defensive, you know. I try to be aware of that. And whenever mm-hmm. someone wants to talk to me or invite me to church, I have a lot of family members that are, it's very important to them that I go to church. And I try to stay open-minded and look at it from like they care about me and they think that I'm like, they genuinely think I'm going to go to hell because I don't go. So I try to be empathetic to that, but I also ask for that in return and I very rarely get it. So I, yeah. That's my main thing is like, if somebody wants to come to me, pray for me, send me a scripture that, you know, resonates with them, as long as they're respectful and understand, like, this is hard mm-hmm. for me at times. I can't always be receptive to it. I'm open to like have educational conversations. Like, let's talk about our opposing views. I'm like,
let's talk about it. But also what you experienced on several different levels is trauma. You yeah. experienced some trauma, and respecting that was traumatizing and that things can be re-triggering
yeah.
matters. And yeah, that's really hard. It's interesting because my version of that would be, that kind of comes up sometimes, is that there are people in my life, including my two best friends who I started this podcast talking about this episode, they are still working the 9-to-5 life. And sometimes when we swap work stories, it can get difficult. Like it's tricky because we did make a lot of progress past that initial like tough conversation, which has gone down in infamy in our friendship. But you know, if they want to talk about something going on with layoffs or no raises or an issue with a boss or something like that, like they want to be able to talk to me freely about it, but they also know I'm going to come at it from a perspective of like what's going on in my head is always going to be some level of these are all the reasons why I'm against this, you know, and being able to keep the space safe for each other where I can talk about what I'm experiencing, what I'm going through, like we're talking about in these episodes, but also they can talk about what they're experiencing and they're going through and know that I can be supportive of them, that they're still going to choose what's right for them and what they want to do and where they want to be is working a 9-to-5 and that no one really wants to be working a 9-to-5, but I mean, they would choose that, right? Like that's, it offers them value to their life. And I can respect that there's value in working a 9-to-5 for them.
Yeah.
Not for me.
Absolutely.
No, thank you.
You know, something that I got in trouble for that I think would be a good note to end on, something that I got in trouble saying when I was in ministry school that has stuck with me to this day. I don't remember a lot about that period, like details. I don't remember a lot, I think, because my brain is just like, it was horrible and traumatizing at ministry school. But one thing that I got in trouble for telling girls was we were being constantly taught to deny how we feel about things at ministry school. It was like all about, again, it's a cult mentality. And I don't throw that word around lightly, but it's the mentality of like, deny how you feel, focus on this one thing that we're telling you is the most important, which is God and solidarity with what we're teaching you. Deny how you feel, like you shouldn't, like there was just so much shame in the apartments where we all lived. I remember hearing girls crying over like, why am I so depressed? Or like, why do I feel so lonely? And I'm like, I got in trouble for telling them. And I literally cannot believe that I got in trouble for this. But also, I remember thinking, now looking back, I remember thinking how mature of me, because I was so immature at the time. And for me to have this thought that I'm about to share, looking back on it, I'm like, you weren't so stupid, Amanda. Because there's a lot mm-hmm. I look back on and I'm like, that was a immature decision. You didn't stand up with yourself for yourself because you were immature. But the one thing that I got in trouble for was I would tell them, feel the feelings that you feel. If you feel depressed, let yourself feel that way. Quit denying and pretending that you don't feel sad or that you have to feel the glory of God every 2 seconds. Like that's not sustainable. It's not relatable and it's not reasonable. Like, you're not always going to feel happy. You're not always going to be focused on God. Sometimes you're going to be focused on yourself. That's called self-care. That's called mental health, you know. And I got in trouble for encouraging women to not focus on the point, which is why they were there, which was God. And I'm like, yeah, but they're crying and they're telling you that they're depressed and they're homesick and they're lonely. And I think if I could tell anybody what we've been talking about today, whether it's you're leaving corporate behind, or whether you're choosing to stay in corporate, whether you're choosing to stay in organized religion, or you're choosing to leave religion for whatever reasons, like, we're all human. And I think over the course of these 3 recordings, like, allow yourself to feel the way that you feel. Don't let a capitalist mentality, don't let a religion mentality dictate how you feel at the end of the day. Like, feel the feelings that you feel. That is a quote from 21-year-old Amanda. Where that came from in her complete immaturity is beyond me. But it's a great thing to remember. It's a great thing to remember. So on that note, Sarah, I think you and both, we said it last episode, but I want to reiterate it again. Both of our Instagram inboxes are open to discuss any of these things that we've talked about today personally and privately and safely. Sarah is at Sarah K. Heater on Instagram. I am at Amanda Nelson Reads. And you can find us at Big Brave Business on Instagram as well if you want to come over and chat and friend us up. And just as a reminder, every single Wednesday we have brand new fun content with people that we love and admire and think are funny and awesome and do incredible things in the world. We ask them all kind of fun questions, not just related to business. So if you're not a business person and you just want to dig in and like listen to some really good conversations, I humbly tell you that they are over on Instagram at Big Brave Business.
Yeah, if you think we're funny or interesting, you have to meet our friends.
Definitely. And let me say that if you have loved the show, please leave us a review. We have not gotten one in a couple of weeks and I miss them. So leave us a review and we'll be back next week.
See ya.